God could have completely ruined everything at the global flood. But when the waters receded, he left behind some of the most incredible scenery on the planet, all over the world.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. This is Real Science Radio. I'm Fred Williams.
And I'm Doug McBurney. Fred, this week we have a special guest. Extremely special. It's Mission Imperative's Mike Snavely. If you've been around creationists or the creation world for any length of time, you've probably seen Mike's work. Maybe you've heard him speak. He spent decades helping Christians understand geology, fossils, natural history, all from a biblical perspective. And importantly, he doesn't just do it in classrooms. He does it, in churches, but then also out in the field where there are actual rocks out in the field. Mike, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. So tell us a bit about Mission Imperative. What is Mission Imperative? Where did you get the name?
So, okay, years ago, we were appointees to go back to South Africa as missionaries. My wife and I were missionaries there. That's where I grew up. My dad was a bush pilot for a hospital mission station. So we had already been missionaries there. We're headed back, but the whole issue of creation evolution had always been very near and dear to my heart, because growing up in Africa, I had all kinds of animals as pets, everything wild, everything beautiful. I had just, you name it. The bug world, the animal world was phenomenal. My parents did not need to teach me that God made everything. I could clearly see it. So I was absolutely appalled the year that we actually began to learn about evolution in school, in the public school. Initially, I thought they were joking. I thought they were telling us a fairy tale, you know, whatever. It turns out they are telling us a fairy tale, but they were presenting it as I thought they were joking. And when I realized they were serious, I was utterly appalled, because at that time I was just, maybe 10. At that time, I did not think adults told lies. I thought only kids told lies to get out of trouble. Okay? And so when I realized my teachers are telling me a lie, I was appalled at that, but then I was appalled at the lie they were telling us. So I was always a big enemy of the whole evolution theory. I could not believe that people would actually believe this. So now advance into this, into the time that we were appointees to go back to South Africa, I was asked to teach a Sunday school class, an adult elective on creation evolution. And so I said, oh man, I'd love to do that. Give me a couple months to prepare. And they said, you don't have a couple months. You only have 2 weeks before the class begins. I thought, oh, thank you so much. You know, so anyway, so I began to throw this thing together, and the class grew to over 200 people. And I was astonished at that. And as soon as the class was done, other churches began to invite me to go and speak there on that topic. And I said, well, this isn't even what I do. You know, I was just a Sunday school class. Well, as time went on, what happened was, I began to condense 13 weeks of the Sunday school elective down to presentations I could do over the weekend. And we had actually even thought that maybe we could include this with what we were going to do in South Africa. I was going to be teaching at one of the mission colleges. And I could do this in maybe public schools and whatnot. Anyway, one thing led to another. And I always loved the Mission Impossible TV series. And somebody mentioned to me at the end of the Sunday school class, and while talking with them about these sessions I was doing on the weekends, somebody said, boy, if you're going to, it's absolutely impossible to overcome the teachings of evolution. And I said, well, I don't know how impossible it is, but it's imperative that we try. Voila, Mission Imperative. And the name stuck. And so we said, wait, sounds good to us. So that was all back in 94. And so we have made it official in 95. We realized that the Lord seemed to be changing the direction of our ministry from full-time in South Africa to doing this full-time. And so that's what we did. We established Mission Imperative in 1995 and have been doing it full-time ever since then.
Wow. All right. So you've got some safaris, and I've only heard good things about these.
Oh,
you're not just a great speaker. You've been, I think, keynote, or you've been a big speaker at these homeschool conferences, and you've got these safaris. And I wanted to introduce our audience to those who don't know about your safaris.
Okay.
I'd like you to maybe present, I know one of your most popular one is the Southwest Safari.
Yes.
So if we could take a look at that, but before we do, I want to make sure people know that tonight you will be at Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship, and that's at Littleton Baptist Church at 7 p.m. And so if you're in the Denver area or anywhere near Denver, you need to go see this, because I believe tonight you're talking on Lucy.
But yes.
They need to meet
Aunt Lucy.
You. What's that?
It's called Aunt Lucy. The program is called Aunt Lucy. It's about the human evolution idea.
Yeah. And if people get a chance to meet you, and maybe you'll get brochures on your safaris, I highly encourage people to check these out. So Mike, if you want to let us know about your Southwest Safari, you have a presentation here for us to share with our audience.
Yes. Cool. Let me just preface it by saying this was based on the program I do called The Horror of the Flood. And in that program, we include an animation and a description of the hydroplate theory, which you're familiar with. And Walter Brown himself is in that video. So that's based on that idea. And of course, one of the subchapters of his book is on the Grand Canyon. And so back in 2007, I went on a trip on a raft through the canyon and taking pictures to document it so I could correlate it with his chapter. When I finished that, we made, in 2009, we made a video called Grand Canyon, The Puzzle on the Plateau, because so many people are puzzled about how all of these things could fit together to all the national and state parks on the plateau in that region, mainly Utah and Arizona, how they all fit together. And it was always a mystery to geologists. Well, it wasn't a mystery to this theory, because the post-flood catastrophe, a dam breach, literally explains all this. So we came up with the video, and was released in 2010. The very week it was released, about two different couples came to us and said, "We had no idea. Could you take us out there and show us?" And I said, "What, you mean like a tour?" And I said, "We're not tour directors. We don't do that, you know." And they said, "Well, would you please do it?" Well, six of us went out and tried an itinerary that we worked on for a number of weeks, and we tried it all out. And 2011 was the first official one, and we've had over 30 people, basically, and sometimes we do two a year. So that's the preface behind this. The tours are all based on things that I teach about. So they're educational as well as a lot of fun.
Wow, that's great.
And okay. So before you go on, I just want to thank you for saying the horror of the flood. You know, so often we teach our kids about the flood, and there's a pretty picture of the ark with the pretty animals, and, you know, the giraffe's neck always sticks up. And But it was actually a pretty horrible event where God judged the whole world and killed everybody.
That's right.
And I appreciate you reminding everyone of that, and I can't wait to see how it all fits together in the geology of the Southwest, I'm assuming of the United States?
Yes. In fact, specifically, Southern Utah and Northern Arizona, that's where we go. That's where the Grand Circle is around these parks. And so we visit all the national parks and some of the state parks in that region. But what is interesting to me, and it's how we conclude the video on the Grand Canyon, is all of these parks are here because of the astonishing scenery. Now, God could have completely ruined everything at the global flood. But when the waters receded, he left behind some of the most incredible scenery on the planet, all over the world. This just has a concentration of geological features that we've turned into national and state parks. So God shows his incredible creativity even in destruction. Look what he left behind. And I'll show you some pictures of it. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's okay, Mike. Let's go ahead and take a look at your Southwest Safari. And again, you, if I get this correct, you started this whole idea with the hydroplate in mind, and then people right. found out about the hydroplate there, and it's like, hey, why don't you show us this whole Grand Canyon thing?
Yeah, and yeah, the hydroplate theory came first, then the video on Grand Canyon based on the hydroplate theory came second, and then once people saw the video, they were like, oh, we have to see that for ourselves, and so that's kind of what gave birth to it. And so the trips we do are always, this particular trip is always the end of October into November, because it's the best time of year for three reasons. Number one, the weather is just about perfect, usually. Number two, most of the kids are back in school, so they're, you know, the parks aren't crowded. And number three, it is just off of high season, so the prices tend to drop. And by the way, our trips are all at costs, because it's just an extension of our ministry. So all of the trips we do are high quality. I'm one of the top writers for TripAdvisor, and so we only use TripAdvisor top choice hotels and lodges, but we charge about half of what it normally costs to do a commercial venture. Apples for apples.
Wow. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, I'm looking at a picture right here, Southwest Safaris. So let's yep. dive into this thing.
Okay. So what we're going to do is just show you a couple pictures of what we do. Now we used to start in Vegas and end in Vegas. But when the Raiders moved their football team three blocks from our hotel, we knew we were on borrowed time. So we stopped doing that. We now land in St. George. We start in St. George and end in Phoenix. We still do the same route, but the advantage is we're that much closer to Zion. So the first day, the first official day, it's a full day in Zion. So Zion, if you've ever been there, Zion is just pure majesty. It's actually a leak point in the plateau, according to the theory. As the plateau rose out of the ground, there was a huge amount of water within the sediments within the plateau, and it leaked out in various points, and this is one of the leak points. And so it gets narrower right at the edge of the plateau. It's wide. But as you go up into Zion National Park, it gets narrower and narrower. But at the beginning, it's wider here, and the Virgin River flows through it. This park, it's not even that long. You can take the shuttle from bottom end to the top end. It's only 30 minutes altogether. And there's hikes, trails you can do all over. Some of them are very flat and very easy to do at the north end and the south end. So some of the best scenery is on those two easy trails. But you can hike up into valleys. It's an absolutely stunning place. One of the things that people like to do is go up to Scout's Lookout. And, Scout's Lookout, you begin to ascend the trails. And so this is some of my family members climbing up, and you can see it's a brushed concrete trail. So it's not like it's gravel. It's hard to walk, but it is, you are ascending. And when you get partway up, You're going up 1,200 feet if you can do this. You can see the trail snaking down below you. But the higher up you go, you get scenery like this. It's astonishing. This valley is amazing. So to the south where you're looking, it's wider, and up where this is, you can see the canyon getting narrower and narrower. And when you get up to Scout's Lookout, you're able to see quite well. But there is one thing that you can do beyond Scout's Lookout, and you need a permit to do it. Now, I've done it 12 times, and it is you go on to chains. You have to hold on to chains because you're going up another 300 feet, and you're going up to Angel's Landing. And so here is a picture. Here's a video of some of our group. That's the saddle those people are walking across. And if you fall, you go straight down 1,200 feet down.
Oh,
I think that's good, that part.
Mike, I've got to stop for our radio audience. You'll want to don't even bother looking at this online. If what you've been imagining in your mind, give Mike a call, contact Mission Imperative, and go and see it. What you just made a picture of in your mind, you can actually go and see it, right, Mike?
Yeah, you can. And even if you can't, you can look at YouTube videos of people who have gone on Angel's Landing. You can see it's a scary thing, you know, and most people don't do it. But
is parachute one of your required items to bring?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, you have to have a permit now, because it got dangerous, because the trail is basically, when you're on the chains, You can't bypass somebody else. You have to find little crevasses to get around of people coming down if you're going up. And so the chain, you know, the chain, that's what it's kind of scary to do, but you can still see the scenery is phenomenal. So anyway, you get to the top of Angel's Landing and you have spectacular views of everything up there. And that's one of the popular things to do where some members of our groups try to do it every year if they can get a permit. But that's basically Angel's Landing. And of course, here I am. Here I am sitting at the very edge. You're seeing a shuttle 1,200 feet below me, right next to my head.
Yeah, see, I'd be about 10 feet back from where you're at.
Yeah. Well, I typically am too. I'm not a real fan of heights, but I wanted to get a picture of this. So anyway,
now how far north of the Grand Canyon is this park? Just for
So it's about. You're several hours from the north rim of the canyon. If you leave here, you go to the north rim. If you go to the south rim, it's going to take you a little while to get there. But the north rim, it would just be several hours away. So you're north here a couple hours. North and west, really, in Zion National Park. And then from here, we basically go over to Bryce Canyon. Now, we spend the whole day here, and everybody loves that. In fact, when a lot of people asked when the way we did it before, if we could actually spend more time there. And now we do. We're spending the whole day there. But we go over to Bryce Canyon then. Now, Bryce Canyon, I don't know, man. Zion Canyon is pure majesty. When you get to Bryce Canyon, what is this? This is like a theme park on Mars. This is all what's considered mudstone. And on the top of the Colorado Plateau, there are mini plateaus on top of the plateau. So this is on the top of the Ponsonagon Plateau. And when the flood left the area, as the plateau went up, water leached out of these areas and formed these very strange things called hoodoos. And these things stick up out of the ground like big towers, and they keep falling. So the trails get closed every couple of years because, you know, these things are falling, and they're not building. They can't build anymore. They're solid rock. And of course, they will tell you, oh, these things are building over millions of years. No, they could only build while the material that you're looking at, the material that makes up these hoodoos, was still soft enough to erode like this. So they are collapsing over time, but they're not building anymore. They can't. It's all solid rock anymore. But it's astonishing. As you walk through this area, there's a 3-mile trail that we take people on. And there's many, many miles of trails, but we take people on the trails we've researched the most, and we take them on the best scenery possible. And we also do it the opposite of the way the national park tells you to do it. We do it counterclockwise. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But anyway, when you're going through this, it's amazing. As you're going through these things, they have little tunnels like this. There's about 3 different little tunnels right through the hoodoos you can walk through, and you can just see what astonishing structures these are. So we always tell people, if you have the capability of doing a 3-mile walk, it's like a 600-foot elevation loss and gain. So if you can do it, and we tell people to, you know, start walking, get some exercise, because something like this you don't want to miss. But there's always about 10, 15 people on the trip who are maybe older or maybe have an issue that they can't walk or hike. You can still see all this from the rim. It's just very cool to be able to get down among them. But 2 different years we've been there, it snowed. Now, there is nothing more beautiful than Bryce Canyon and Grand Canyon in snow. And the colors there, look at that, white, dark green, and red. I mean, that's just a beautiful scene. Now, it might preclude you from walking on the trails the day before, but we saw this is what it looked like the day we left to go up to the next park. And this is the second national park. In the middle of this area, we do another national park. We actually stop there for lunch. On the day we leave Bryce Canyon, we head up to Capitol Reef National Park. Now, this is where you really, really see a lot of the red rocks and beautiful cottonwood trees. At this time of year, they're all blooming, not blooming, but they're turning yellow. It's absolutely stunning to watch this. So we go through Capitol Reef, and geological features are astonishing in this park. But after we have lunch, we move on to Moab, where we do 2 national parks. And one is Arches, arch. This is the most famous arch in the world. We view it from the opposite side. We used to be able to walk up this side to see this. They no longer allow bus groups to do this, and nobody's ever been able to figure out why. They've never told us why. So we do it from the opposite side, but we still get to see Delicate Arch, and we some people can hike up closer to it. But there's also arches like Double Arch, Windows Arches. These are very famous. And by the way, you hike up into this thing, and if a bunch of you are in there, you start singing and it echoes, and you can hear it for like a quarter of a mile away. You can hear everybody singing. It's really cool. So,
it depends on who's singing.
It depends on if people can harmonize too. But the world's the longest arch too. It's about 0.7 miles out to it over the relatively flat. But this is about as long as a football field, about 300 feet long, and it's called Landscape Arch. So we go to that one as well. We do all the most famous arches in the park, and then there's not only arches. There are strange features. Nobody knows how that thing is still standing. This is called Balanced Rock. And I mean, it doesn't look like it's possible at all for that thing to still be there, but it is. It must be weighted on the right side more than on the left, but I don't know how that thing still stands. But there are some phenomenal features. I personally think that God left this stuff here just for us to enjoy. So, and the scenery through the area is beautiful. When we leave at sunset, you're looking at the La Salle Range, which is the backdrop for Moab. And this area, Arches National Park, is where, as the lake was receding, it was far from the breach point. So as water was going through this area, it was eroding out all of the sandstone. And when sandstone collapses like that, especially Navajo sandstone and some of these other sandstone features, when they collapse in arches. It's just the physical structure of that type of sandstone. And so as water was moving through this area, it carved out more arches than anywhere else. And so the areas it's beautiful.
And so, Mike, really quick, back to the arches. I know that there's arches that have collapsed, and yet these things were supposed to form over, what, millions of years, and we're just lucky enough to be around when some of them collapse, right?
Yes. In fact, in 2007, we were under Wall Arch. In fact, we stopped under its shade to stop for a drink, to get some water and so forth. We had our lunch under there. Later that year, it collapsed. And so when I take people up to Landscape Arch each year, those who want to continue up the primitive trail, you have to kind of go up on slick rock, I take them up and show them the collapsed arch. It collapsed just months after we were there. Wow. So they are disappearing, but they're not forming again. They're disappearing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Yep.
So then when we go to the next park we go to, which is right close to it, is Canyonlands. And you can look way off in the distance. You can see the Henry Mountain Range. It's a small mountain range like the La Salle's. But here you're looking at the floor of the drained lake. Now, as far as you can see, all of the hills that you see, you're at the same level where I'm standing, and this has all been islands. So they call this Island in the Sky now, the National Park does. Back when the lake was there, this would have been Island in the Lake. So now let me show you what the viewpoint is. This is the Green River Overlook, and you can see the Green River roughly to the top right side of your screen. You can see the Green River flowing away from you. But if you look next to the river, you can see that the ground has collapsed. And if you look right in the foreground, you can see where the ground slumped, because when all of that material and the lake left the area and began to carve out where the river is now flowing, all of that subterranean water began to leak out toward where the river is flowing. And as it leaked out that way, all of those, you can see it's like little canyons. They all collapsed into the river. Grand Canyon is a massive collapse. This is a local one at the Green River. And this is absolutely indicative that there was a lake here, because if you clean a lake today, this is exactly what you'll see. You'll have inner collapses like this. This is just on a massive scale. So when people say, well, we don't see evidence that there was ever a lake there. Oh, yes, there was. Even evolutionists admit it now. And so this is a classic view that we take people to, so you can actually see the evidence for where a lake was. But then as you move south through Blanding area, you come into a very famous area where the lake also was. Again, these are famous. Can't you just picture John Wayne riding down through this valley here? But this is Monument Valley. And again, these would have been islands in that lake. And in fact, if you notice, there's very little bit of talus. There's almost no tailings at the bottom of these, which indicates that as the lake was leaving the area, as these were collapsing, the water was carrying all the talus away. If this has been sitting here for millions of years, you'd see far more talus sitting there, but it's gone. So this is indication that it was a much more rapid event, much more rapid erosive event. And then what you're left with is what we have today. And this would be Monument Valley. So it's an iconic Southwest scenery. And this is beautiful. So we always stop here for lunch and we go in so people can actually see some of this. But then when we move on to Page area, where close to where the dam actually was, one of the most famous sites in the nation is Horseshoe Bend. It used to be, when we first started doing this, it was just a little gravel parking lot and almost nobody knew about it. But then Utah began to advertise, and boy, now it is a national park, and now it's got, now you have to pay to get in, and everything is a tarred parking lot, but it's still worth it. It's beautiful to go up to the edge here and look down. You're looking down anywhere, depending on where you are, about 1,500 feet straight down to the river, and this is the day we arrive in Page. Early the next morning, we go into a slot canyon, and then we get onto a raft, and we raft right past this Horseshoe Bend, and we look up at the people looking down at us. So it's a really fun thing to do. So the next morning,
raft around that?
Yes, we go onto a raft, and you'll see that in a moment. We raft the river for 3 hours. So
this
it's a
is
really
the
fun
breach. This is a theory that says
yes.
This is where, okay.
This would have all been underwater. This would have been very close to where the dam breached. In fact, if you look at the very top of your screen, you're seeing Vermilion Cliffs. That is the right, or I should say the west side of the funnel. And the funnel is the area that collapsed when the dam collapsed, releasing all this water. And so it's an amazing sight as the river was carving. All this would have been soft and rivers carve a meandering path. So you can see how amazing all of that is. Now, on the next morning, the Navajo take us through what's called a slot canyon. This is Upper Antelope Canyon. This is phenomenal. These are giant cracks in the sandstone that formed when the plateau rose. And this sandstone is it's hard as rock. You could gouge into it, I guess, but the sandstones on either side, you can easily even move with your hands. These have been here for a long time since the flood, but they're amazing things. It's a site that is on Navajo territory, so you can't just go there on your own. You have to go through with a Navajo guide, but it is an absolute must to see because it's an amazing part of the Colorado Plateau. And so that's what a slot canyon is.
Hey, I got to interrupt here, though. Before we continue the safari, I can't let Doug off the hook for the interesting fact of the week.
No, Fred, I was enjoying the safari. Come on, let's get back on the, let's get back into
okay,
the
so here it is, Doug. Are you ready?
Yes, of course.
Okay, so we're looking at a lot of rocks, rock formations. So what is the most abundant rock on Earth?
The most abundant rock on Earth.
On Earth.
You know, the answer seems really obvious, which usually means I'm wrong. Granite. I knew it. I knew it was too obvious.
Mike, do you want to take a crack at it? I won't buzz you. I don't buzz my guests.
Okay, I'd say hard rocks.
I like that one. I like that.
I don't know if I can resist. I might have to buzz my guest.
I would have said granites too, but I don't think it's limestone or basalt, but I don't know.
It's basalt.
Oh, it is basalt. Okay.
Yeah, you were close.
Oh,
yeah,
the bottom of the ocean, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of ocean out there.
I should have known.
Of course. Yeah.
I should have known. Well, there you go, Fred.
Yeah, so some say it's about 70%, but yeah, basalt.
Wow.
So, all right.
Cool.
Okay,
all right. Mike. No. Now, Mike, take us back on the safari. Please get us out of here.
Oh, okay. So after we do the Slot Canyon, we go down to a raft company where we raft the river for 3 hours. And it is an amazing experience. We actually stop and view some petroglyphs. It's not always fast like this. Sometimes we just go slow. That's always a phenomenal thing to do. Sometimes they just shut off the engine and just let us coast down. It's amazing. And all along this area on this red sandstone, you'll see this bluish looking rock. It's actually on the surface. This is called desert glaze. It can't be reproduced in the laboratory. It's actually microorganisms in the rock that almost literally make a sunscreen for themselves out of manganese. And it takes a long time to carve, but a lot of the early Native Americans carved scenery into this. And this is where you see a lot of the petroglyphs of the Southwest. In any event, once we leave this area, we go to Navajo Bridge, where you can actually, this is right on the floor of the funnel where the lake breached. On the left, you can see Vermilion. On the right, you can see Echo Cliffs. The floor of the funnel is that hard Kaibab limestone. You can see it has a yellow look. This is what cracked up, it bulged and cracked up. It's where the Colorado River is flowing now. And then when we leave this area, we head on down to the Grand Canyon for people's first look at the Grand Canyon at sunset. It's a phenomenal thing. We spend a day and a half, actually parts of 3 days at the Grand Canyon, but you have a full day and a half to enjoy it. And of course, I've got thousands of pictures of it, but we'll just close it with that. That's just basically where, I mean, the Grand Canyon, you can never get tired of seeing that.
Well, that's phenomenal. That's wow. And that's just one safari. You've got a couple others that you do.
Absolutely.
And we'll have to have you back, Mike, because I want you to introduce the audience to, I think you've got the Alaska Safari and your wildlife safari that sounds really interesting. And the wildlife one, that's in Africa, right?
Absolutely. South Africa. Yep. 16-day ultimate wildlife safari.
Wow. 16 days. Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. You got to come back. You got to come back, Mike, and tell us about it because our audience needs to know. And any opportunity our audience has to support biblically based science education, we want them to have an opportunity. We really appreciate you coming and telling us all about this and showing us so much. Wow, mind-boggling.
Yes, yeah, beautiful area. Thank you for having me.
Oh, and speaking of the hydroplate theory, if you go to hydroplate.org, starting at the end of February, there's going to be a great deep newsletter, and you need to go there and check it out for all the latest hydroplate theory news. And again, you can go to hydroplate.org. Also, please be sure to go to the store.rsr.org. We've got the 9th edition of Walt Brown's In the Beginning. You can pre-order it there. We expect books to start arriving roughly mid-March through the end of March, and we'll be able to start shipping those to you, but you can pre-order those now. So again,
that's right. At the store, Fred, they can go and they can sponsor a show. You can sponsor the interesting fact of the week if you'd like. We always mention our sponsors in the most popular part of the show. Check out the Great Deep newsletter to get into some of the deeper things about hydroplate theory, flood geology, creation in general, just some phenomenal stuff. Check out kgovstore.com.
Okay, so for our guest, Mike Snavely, and my co-host, Doug McBurney, I'm Fred Williams of Real Science Radio. May God bless you.